its own inertia. Well, the Supreme Court says your boyfriend or girlfriend needs a warrant to look through your phone, unless they do it without thinking or think it's their phone, or they're just cleaning your screen. Okay. Supreme Court. They're not very funny in the Supreme Court. Never were. So, what do you know?
Live from Charleston, West Virginia to Pocatello, Idaho, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on the piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know? We draw up laughs with the New Yorker cartoonist Bob Mankoff, plus all the news that isn't and the What Do You Know? Quiz. Support for What Do You Know? Is provided by PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who complains that fireworks on June 28th are de facto not July 4th. It's Michael Feldman.
Yeah, who is that? Oh, we are, what happened on June 28th? Nothing ever happened on June 28th. Certainly no reason to send off a bunch of fireworks here. Okay, I'm just saying. I mean, do you agree? I mean, 4th of July, that's... Am I talking to myself? I am? Okay. That's all right, too. I do a lot of that. Not so bad. Okay, and all the news that isn't, orders for capital goods rise, unfortunately, mostly for capital punishment. That's a good place to start, you know.
Gotta start somewhere.
Yeah. By the way, if they're getting the lethal drugs from the Rite Aid, I'd like to know. I think Mercedes launches its first hydrogen car, the Hindenburg. You've probably seen the Oh, the Humanity commercial. Diane Sawyer leaving the ABC Evening News to devote more time to busy work. Aubrey. Damn it. Give me the wrong one again. Okay. Meanwhile, only Whoopi Goldberg left standing after the bloodbath at The View. And she surely filled her depends, I'll tell you that. Whoa, he's right. LeBron opts out of the Heat contract. He will return to St. Vincent, St. Mary's in Akron. Although Archbishop Hoban and Walsh Jesuit really wanted him. Okay, mild titters. Huh? Yeah, they would. In Akron, they would love that. NBA draft went pretty much as expected. You know, you could be the greatest college prospect in the history of college basketball, and you'll still end up in Cleveland or Milwaukee. Jabari Parker, happy with the Bucks, always hoped to work for a New York investment firm. Thank you, John. This is all for you, by the way. Yeah, so thank you. Hillary is on the fence between the presidency and The View. Hillary supposedly told friends that President Obama was incompetent and feckless, but come on. Friends? She has friends? Can't be true. Besides, who says feckless? What is feck? Friendless? I could see her saying friendless. Anyhow. Luis Suarez not grinding his teeth over the suspension. It was pretty toothless, you got to admit. And here is me thinking this is just another thing in soccer I don't get. You know, you can bite a guy if you're going out of bounds. A lot of things in soccer or football, if you prefer, that I do not get. Like, why such big, strong men should hit the turf like little baby girls. What happens in that just millisecond interval to them? The good news, of course, is Hannibal Lecter doesn't play football. The USA has a good loss against Germany. That's like good cholesterol. People from Indiana can now marry people from Utah. That's cool. Space-time ripples can occur if you don't shake out the event horizon. That's just for some scientists out there who enjoy a little humor. Speaking of scientists, scientists are still shaking their heads over how Neanderthals could pass fossilized poop. They keep finding it. $2 million for Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone All the Way to the Bank. What am I going to do with you people? The Supreme Court says the president may not make recess appointments and he has to stay on the boys' side of the playground. The court also said it's a good cardiovascular for women to run the gauntlet on the way to the clinic. Okay, take it to them, don't take it to me. One thing about this ISIS band shows is that not all millennials don't know what to do with their lives. Thank you, whatever that was, chuckling. Under Google Europe's new right to be forgotten, a search for a Hitler only turns up springtime 4. And if you search a Nazi, you get a Seinfeld soup Nazi. IKEA raises the minimum wage to 11 kronen per hour. That's a lot of kronen. After Suarez, or AS, as they're calling it now, there are copycat bitings in every sport, including curling and tournament bridge. So that's the upshot of that one. In Iraq, they're rushing to put up an al-Maliki statue so they can pull it down. Sheboygan man wins $1 million in Powerball, moves to Sheboygan Falls. Okay, finally got you at that there, Sheboygan man. And finally, the John Doe prosecutor in Wisconsin here says, no decision whether crimes were committed or just Walker being Walker. That's all the news that is, and thank you so much. And let's try it again. Let's try it again. Mix it up a little bit. Let's put some verbs where the objects were and see if that makes a difference. Okay. All right. I should have mentioned that was the humor part of the show. But now this is the real humor because we got Bob Mankoff on here. He is the he's a cartoonist for The New Yorker, which is like the highest form of life, as we know, possible in our current age. And but he's also the editor, so he decides who goes in there and all that stuff. And he's so and this he has a new book out based on his famous cartoon, probably his most famous cartoon, How About Never Is Never Good For You? My Life in Cartoons, Bob Mankoff. He's on here. What is Briarcliff Manor, Bob?
Briarcliff Manor is a real estate name that is where I'm located, right next to Ossining, New York, which used to have, or maybe still has, Sing Sing Prison. But I'm on the loose.
So it's really Sing Sing, New York.
Yeah. It's Sing Sing Manor.
Yeah.
So it's a very gated community.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah. I just heard the last part of your monologue. I want to just really congratulate you for trying to make people laugh at, 10 a.m. in the morning?
Yeah, or any time.
That's almost impossible. Or, I mean, it's 11 here. It's a little bit better, but, yeah.
I find time of day doesn't matter for me so much.
Yeah.
It's irrelevant. So, here's one thing I did want to ask you was this reference you have in the pop song. Or in a rap song. Do you know MC Paul Barman?
Oh, please, let's start with
the song, and this is the name of the song.
I know him. Somehow he ended up on my Wikipedia, mm-hmm. and among many obscene lyrics, he also states that he can draw better than me, and he might well be able to.
Well, but, yes.
Whoops. You can't say that on the radio. We'll return to more fun in just a moment.
And he's a Jewish rapper, so take that into account. And the rhyme was, she almost shrank off when I said, take your top tank off. I draw 1,000 times better than Robert Mankoff.
I think that's an exaggeration, 1,000, and that doesn't sound like a very good pickup line.
Yeah. Do you know this guy? Does he draw at all? Has he submitted cartoons?
He came in actually once to the magazine, as many people do every once in a while, because everybody, I'm sure, in your audience.
Everybody draws.
Everybody has an idea for a cartoon.
Yeah.
Many of them say, I can't draw.
Yeah.
I think maybe one of the most interesting incidents is that Norman Mailer called my assistant, and he said, I'd like to come in and show Mr. Mankoff some cartoons. I said, I think he's got the wrong department, right? Like fiction or something?
Yeah.
But no, he comes in, and I said, Mr. Mailer, you draw cartoons? He said, not exactly. He was right. He had little sort of squiggle faces with sort of writing underneath. Later, he published them in a book called Modest Gifts, which was very aptly titled.
Yeah. Did he sell any of those? Probably not.
No, I think actually Vanity Fair published some of them.
Yeah,
so if
yeah.
you're really curious, David Mamet also has sent me cartoons. When I became cartoon editor, he sent me a note saying, congratulations, I'm sending you a batch of cartoons. I sent him back a note saying, thank you very much. I've taken the liberty of sending you a play.
That's pretty good.
But, thanks. I like the evaluation.
Yeah, no, that's pretty good. I wouldn't know what to say. I'd be too flabbergasted, you know, to say anything clever back to David Mamet.
Well, no. I mean, he just wrote a note. If he was there in the office, I'd be afraid of him.
Yeah. But Mailer, you put down in person, didn't you?
No, Mailer, but he's very old at the time.
Yeah, that'd be a dangerous thing to do.
Yeah,
actually.
You know, he was old. He was on crutches. I didn't think he could, hit me with a left hook or something.
Yeah. It must be a living hell to be the editor for The New Yorker, the cartoon editor, because
you know, I mean, the problem, as you pointed out, is there are conflicts because I'm the cartoon editor. I do the cartoons. I established this licensing company, the Cartoon Bank, which sells them.
Yeah.
So you might think between, you know, doing cartoons, selecting cartoons, there would be a conflict of interest, and I do, and I've established a Blue Ribbon Committee to investigate this. And it takes time, you know that, Michael.
Do you ever say to yourself, Mankoff, I don't think this one does it?
Yeah. But anyway, I'm heading that committee.
Yeah. Okay. You're heading. So, I'm sorry to step on that, Bob.
Sorry. That's okay.
Yeah. You never turned down a Mankoff.
Well, actually, a lot. David Remnick makes the ultimate decision on my cartoons. And absolutely. Actually, I submit a lot less since I've become cartoon editor because, as I say in the book, we have a whole new bunch of people submitting cartoons, very good cartoons.
Yeah, oh, they're great. I mean, it's amazing. Your own style now, where did you develop? Your line is like dots. And dashes. Dots and dashes.
It's called stippling, which sounds like a dermatological disease.
Yeah. Which it is also, I guess.
Which it is also, yeah. That's right.
Did you always stipple? Did you always stipple from the beginning? Or?
Well, yeah, my mother took me to various physicians to try to cure me of it, but, you know, that was something. It's making these little dots, pointillism, like Surratt and stuff. I drew that way in the High School of Music and Art, or I made little pictures like that. And then originally I started because it was a little bit of a gimmick. I thought when you submit cartoons to magazines, when I did in the 70s, most of them is through the mail, and you want to be noticed, and I figured I would be noticed. And I got a note back from the New York Times once saying, we like your ideas, but could you try some less cumbersome style? And
cumbersome.
So that didn't work out, but it worked out for the New Yorker.
And have we ever...
And for interviews where people ask me about it.
Have we ever forgotten that comment from the New York Times? I bet we have not.
No, it's pasted. It's pasted in my scrapbook.
But it is kind of unique. So you started out with that line?
Well, I drew it a lot of different ways. Yeah. I was at the High School of Music and Art where, just like Paul Barman, many people, there was three sort of select schools in New York City you had to admit to. There was Brooklyn Tech, the Bronx High School of Science, and the High School of Music and Art, which is now, unfortunately, although he was a great mayor, called LaGuardia High School. I don't think it's as good a name. And to get in there, you had to, like, take tests and stuff. And once I got in there, I said, wow, all these people, or a lot of these people, can draw better than me. Fortunately now, sort of 50 years on, most of them became dentists or whatever. my minor talent combined with some humor helped me.
Yeah, yeah. And that's really it, isn't it? I mean, the line, I mean, that makes it the cartoonist. It's not so much the joke, even, as much as a unique line. The New Yorker is just full of people with completely unique lines.
Well, it's sort of a voice, whether it's Roz Chast or going back to James Thurber or Charles Adams. And so, I mean, the interesting thing, I think, about the New Yorker cartoons is that, I mean, comedy now is a big business. And, you know, Jon Stewart is great, and he has 25 writers helping, you know, enhancing his talent. But with a New Yorker cartoon, whether it's Ross Tast or me or any of the 20 or 30 artists they have, you know, it's the whole deal. You write the line, you draw the picture, and, you know, maybe a Ross Tast cartoon, if we gave it to the whole staff of Jon Stewart or maybe whoever writes for you or maybe you,
yeah,
everyone could work on it. We could crowdsource it, and it'd be better, but it'd also be worse.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't have that personality.
Yeah. I mean the ink line, though.
Oh, well, the ink line is interesting because the ink line, it was the line in the caption, the concept.
Yeah.
But the
concept, I say. It's if you got the line, the drawing,
well,
the ink
just
line.
Just the line. Well, that's true, but and there's different types of lines, you know, realistic drawing for something that's really observational humor. But let's say there's humor that sort of might cause some people in your sensitive audience, like, to go, ooh, like let's say this cartoon. It shows a gallows, and it shows steps to the gallows, but it also shows a ramp for the handicapped.
So it's accessible.
So you need that to be drawn sort of playfully.
Yeah, that's like that Native Americans one with the cowboy is inside his chuck wagon or whatever. All the arrows are flying, and he's yelling out, "Native Americans!" I thought that
was along the same lines. All of that because
the
New Yorker is a very sort of empathetic environment, and people are very, very sensitive. Like we get, you know, let's say we recently did a cartoon. And anyway, the annals of the offended are very, very long. I'll give you some examples. We did a cartoon recently where there's a woman talking to another woman, and she's saying, "I've only been gluten-free for a week, but I'm already annoying." and I'm just going to read you the email. "Shame on you people for publishing your cartoon. I've only been gluten-free for a week. I'm already annoying. For those of us with celiac disease, I find it very insensitive and offensive. Living this way is a necessity of life, not a fair diet. We live in a serious autoimmune disease. Try walking a mile in our shoes." And the last part, I actually take it, because the good thing about walking a mile in someone else's shoes is you're a mile away from them and you have their shoes.
Is that what you said to her?
Yeah. I'll give you another example of this where there's a cartoon and it's lab guys and they're looking at a rodent inside and the rodent has hung himself. And the lab guy is saying, "Discouraging data on the antidepressant." And so I got letters. I don't like to see animals. So one of those, "I don't like to see animals suffer, even in cartoons."
No.
And I wrote back, "They don't suffer. We use anesthetic ink." And one of the things people often misinterpret what's happening, the gluten-free cartoon is not about the people who actually have the disease.
No.
It's about everybody who thinks it. There wouldn't be a wall in the supermarket which had it. Anyway, people often, recently we did a cartoon in where it's Moses, he's parting the Red Sea, and there's a guy next to him with, you know, the metal detector that you use on the beach. Okay, so we get cartoons saying that "I was shocked and outraged to see your latest issue depiction of Moses leading the Israelites to the parting sea. By showing this depiction, the New Yorker perpetuates a horrible stereotype about Jews."
Oh.
Anyway, so let's see. I'm Jewish.
Was it an obviously Jewish man who was...
No. First of all, Moses is just a mythological character.
Yeah.
The guy, it's just the conflation between the high and low. But let's see. David Remnick's Jewish, he decides. I'm Jewish, I decide. Harry Bliss, who drew the cartoon, is half Jewish, so I can only assume the part of him that isn't Jewish is anti-Semitic and did the cartoon.
Yeah. A self-hater.
You know,
A self-hater.
That's how sensitive, you know, the people are to the stuff that appears in the New Yorker versus then at a comedy club or maybe even on your show.
Yeah. Or, for example, this is Lawrence. He does something with right-wing smearing. That's sort of...
Right. That's right. That's Bruce Eric Kaplan, who incidentally goes by the name B.E.K. And in my book, you know, there's this Seinfeld episode where Elaine doesn't understand the cartoon. And Bruce Eric Kaplan, B.E.K., who did the cartoon you just referenced, he wrote that, and I had just become cartoon editor, and I, you know, the fact that New Yorker cartoons are hard to understand, and I called him on the phone, and I said, "Et tu, Bruce?"
You're your biggest fan. That's what I like about you, Maureen.
Yeah, well.
But it's justified.
Why
at least
not?
In your
everyone else is sure to desert you.
Yeah. It's justified in your case. I like that. The guy who's carrying his baby into the office there says, what do you think, boss? Adorable Dobson, but baby pictures will suffice from now on. So there's a
mango. Yeah. And I did that cartoon when I had my daughter Sarah. That's
yeah.
about.
So all works in. Like walking into a bar and ordering Enfamil, that sort of thing.
Are these your jokes or mine? I think they're mine.
That was yours. I'm not taking credit for any of this stuff.
Good, that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You use them anytime. Just, you know, it's a licensing fee, and we'll work it out.
Yeah, and you know what I like about your guys is that you can always see the texture on their suits and their pants. I always get the warp and the woof.
There's not many different clothing options in my artistic wardrobe.
They're always wearing something that looks pretty itchy.
Yeah, yeah.
But not as itchy as Ross Chast.
But they don't suffer because, you know, it's anesthetic.
Yeah. Ross Chast, I think, is a lot itchier than you. I have to scratch. I mean, I love her stuff, but it also makes me itchy.
Well, Roz is, you know, this is, I mean, I think Roz's cartoons, you know, deal with, you know, some really, very deep humor. She has a book out, you know, Can We Talk About Something More Pleasant, which is about her aging parents and them dying. And I think, you know, the various types of cartoons, some of them are just jokes, you know,
right.
a knife with all corkscrews, and it's called, you know, French Army Knife. Mm. Okay. But a Roz cartoon, like one of them she did a number of years ago, was a guy looking at the obits and all of the things say 3 years older than you, 2 years younger than you, your age right on the dot. So I think, so it, you know, it's varied. I mean, there's truth and there's just jokes.
Yeah. Is it impossible not to have favorites among your flock of cartoonists? I mean, I noticed you said Ziegler was one of your
well,
personal
Jack
favorites.
Well, you know, I mean, Jack Ziegler did that Gallows cartoons.
Yeah.
I have different cartoonists that I sort of, you know, admire for different things. Some of them are, you know, we have a new cartoonist, Ed Steed, who was living in England. I moved to Taipei because he wanted to afford the cartoon. And we recently bought a cartoon of his in which there's people on the street, and they look like they're asking for money with a cup. But they're Red Cross people, and one woman is saying to the husband, don't give it to them. They'll only use it for drugs. So we have new cartoonists coming in, and when people say, you know, do you have a favorite joke? That's what, or cartoon or whatever. Mm. That sort of implies there's a second favorite, a third, and a 48th.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't look at it that way. Also, I don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah. But you must be accosted everywhere you go, though. Like, you're kind of like the food critic or something like that, who goes in. You know, everyone's going to try to please you or shove something that their cousin drew.
Yeah.
At you.
Well, yeah, and so, you know, and so you become sort of, you got to watch out that you don't become such a connoisseur of humor that you don't like anything.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, I think that's the nature of judgment. You know, when you're looking at the monologue that you're doing and you're writing the jokes or looking at the jokes, you're not laughing at them, I would hope. You're saying, ah, this works, that doesn't work. So there's a craftsman, you know, part of it, and, you know, it's a tough, dirty job, but someone has to do it. And and I've been on the other side a lot when, you know, I had that whole thing where I did about 2,000 cartoons before getting accepted to the New Yorker and suffered all that rejection. And the truth is, it's a lot easier rejecting than being rejected.
Yeah. I like this one. The other guy, the tombstone, says the other guy on it.
Yeah, that's a cartoon. That's a cartoon of mine, and that's part of the humor that you have. I have in the book about that I'm a hypochondriac because my mother in the book I say my mother lived to be 93, but she was in robust ill health her whole life. you know, always complaining, and I never, I'd always ask my mom. I said, "Well, Mom, how are you feeling?" And she'd say, "Not 100%." And so I said to her, "What's the highest you ever reached?" I want sort of a baseline to know, what it is. And so I sort of inherited, that thing and sort of a general anxiety that she had. And maybe actually is common just to get a little bit ethnic to Jewish humor about events and what might unfold. So many of Roz's cartoons, and, you know. So
yeah.
One of my cartoons, I say, well, you know, I don't think we should panic, but I think we should make preparations to that panic. And so that's, I think, what I'm doing most of the time.
Are there any guidelines at the New Yorker as to use of talking apartment animals?
Well, animals, you know, we
do you have a limit? Can you just submit like one or two?
Everything talk. Well, yeah. At one time, Jim Garrity, who was the art editor and cartoon editor before Lee Lorenz, who was the one before me, got so tired of animal cartoons. Mm-hmm. And in 1959, it's some November issue, and you can actually look it up in the New Yorker archive, he only published animal cartoons mm-hmm. in the magazine, and no one noticed. So I think one of the most famous animal cartoons goes back to 1993. It's Peter Steiner's cartoons. It's the two dogs in front of the computer saying, you know, on the internet, no one knows you're a dog. Of course, now everyone knows exactly what type of dog you are, the breed, your owner, and you know, and their criminal record.
But was it Thurber who started with the talking animals? Was he the initiator?
Well, you know, originally his animals don't talk. We talk to them.
Okay.
It's really not until late. You know, there's a lot of animals. We talk about the animals and stuff, but they don't talk. But then, you know, maybe in the 40s and 50s, that becomes sort of a comic trope. I mean, often the funniest ones are when we talk at them. There's a Leo Cullum cartoon where he's looking at the cat in front of the box, and he's saying, never, ever think outside the box.
Yeah. That's a good one. I like that one. You don't do many talking animals, though, do you?
I can't because I have trouble drawing those animals.
Yeah. You can't stipple an animal? Can't stipple a cat?
It's not my... I think one of them I did where there's a cat talking to a bird in a tree. This is probably from the mid-90s, a little bird in a tree. And the cat is saying, let's do lunch.
Yeah. Well, that's cute. Is it hard to stipple something with fur? Because I would think that wouldn't be so hard.
Yeah, it is. First stippling is some ascent of artistic something that I still have to mount.
When you were a kid, a young person, did you want to be in Mad Magazine? Was that your first choice?
I wanted to be. I saw cartoons. Mad Magazine was a big influence, not the New Yorker. And although, you know, when I talk about it in the book, because I'm 70 now, and my joke about being 70 is the good news is 70 is the new 50. The bad news is dead isn't the new alive. So when I was growing up, there wasn't, you know, my parents had gone through the Depression, and my mom and dad were born in 1908. I remember when I decided after sort of quitting graduate school in psychology that I told my parents, for many reasons, I told them, well, you know, I'm going to be a cartoonist, because actually I did, going way back. My father looked at me rather sternly and said, you know, they already have people who do that. Like it was a civil service thing. But I did look at Mad Magazine and cartooning, and I did draw all the time, and it was sort of a natural fit. For me to do, although I put it on hold during the 60s when I was avoiding the Vietnam War. But then, which is sort of interesting, when I became 30, it was sort of like I said, okay, I'm going to give it a shot. I did give it a shot, and it only took 2,000 rejections at the New Yorker before I became sort of an overnight success.
Did you have a fallback position, law school, medical school, accountancy?
Well, not really, because I was incompetent in everything else, which helped me. I really had worked for the welfare department and really almost becoming eligible myself. I did, amazingly enough, even though I'm slightly dyslexic, I taught speed reading at a Catholic school, girls' high school, by telling them to read faster or they'd burn in hell, which was sort of effective. So I really didn't have a fallback position. I mean, I had already failed on my fallback position.
Yeah.
And I think actually that was helpful. It was a certain, you know, desperation. Although I don't, I don't recommend it. Although sometimes when I go to school, because you know, career days, and I do, and if I find any kid in high school who wants to cartoon, I said, well, good news is you can quit school right now. And that's when they escort me out.
Yeah. Is there any resentment among the cartoonists for the filler in The New Yorker, the articles and reviews and such?
Well,
are there two camps? There must
well,
be.
Well, yeah, there's one camp, the writers, and David Remnick, who's a writer, and then we're at the children's table. We're at the children's camp.
Yeah, but everyone buys it and looks at the cartoon. You know, they might article or two, but everyone looks
at it. They do. And I told, you know, the joke is 98% of the people say they read the cartoons first, and the other 2% lie. So I did say that, you know, we could fit, and I told David, you know, we could fit, to David Remnick, who's the editor, we could fit more cartoons in the magazine if we remove the articles.
Right.
But he's not for that. He's not for that. I don't think the cartoonists resent it. Probably they're a little bit more, you know, for most of its history, The New Yorker had no illustrations, no artwork but the cartoons. It's only after really Tina Brown, or maybe it was Bob Gottlieb, shortly before Tina in the late 80s, early 90s, that photographs were included. And, you know, and now there are lots of photographs, and they do take up place. They could take, we could have cartoons, and they're very nice, the photography department. But when I walked by, I said, you know, it's only a fad.
Yeah, passing. And but still no color, though, right? I mean, color. If you use color,
well,
you're an illustrator.
There's color where you need it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's color, but not color. I mean, Harold Ross, when he asked why the cartoons weren't in color, he said, what's so funny about red? And I think to some extent that's true. You know, on the other hand, if you have a Jack Zeeler cartoon and it's sort of the day after Christmas and you see a reindeer mounted on Santa's wall and there's a little red nose that's red, you know, then it makes sense.
Yeah. That's the only time, though?
No, we have it. You know, there's color when somehow the color is actually part or is,
it's
you know, makes the joke.
Yeah.
You know, so you might have a caption contest where there's a bull outside the window and there's cows inside who are domestic and anthropomorphized, but the curtains are red and the window has been broken. So you use red or blue or green or something when that's going to make sense and contribute to the joke.
Yeah. Do you have to, as the cartoonist, do you have to argue for its use? Do you have to make the case for use of color?
I have to argue for other things, but not really for its use. I mean, David Remnick has a great sense of humor, and he's by this time he's seen as many cartoons, because we get about 1,000 a week, and I show him about 50 a week as really anybody else but me.
Uh-huh. And as far as like the captions or the lines, what do you call them? You don't call them captions, do you? What do you call it? The line?
No, it's a caption.
It's a caption, okay.
That's why we have a cartoon caption contest at the back of every issue.
By the way, I've finally given up on it because I submitted so many. But I had one.
Have you entered?
I have. Listen to this one now and tell me what happened here. Okay.
Okay.
There's these guys. They're in a wagon train going west, and you can see the Sierras in the background, and there are searchlights coming up from behind the mountains.
This is a Gay Ann Wilson cartoon, I remember.
Okay, and searchlights coming up there, and the one guy says to the other, in my version, there's Goldwyn and them thar hills.
You know, we made a mistake on that one, Michael.
I should have had it. I was so crushed. I thought, God, this has got to be, you know, it's probably what he had.
You could have been a contender.
Oh, at least one of the three put in there.
We get 5 to 10,000.
I know.
Every week, so and we look at all.
I know.
How many times have you entered?
I don't know. Maybe a dozen. I gave up. I was crushed.
Roger Ebert, the late Roger Ebert, won after 107 entries. You know what I mean? So really, you're a piker in terms of entries. I mean, Zach Galifianakis just entered twice, Maureen Dowd 3 times.
Yeah.
There are people who've entered, you know, hundreds of times.
Yeah.
And, I'm encouraging you and everyone in your audience.
Yeah. Well, which does come like when you're cartooning, do you get the line first, the idea first, or do you get a drawing? I mean, you don't do it like they do in the contest. You don't draw something and say, what would be a good caption for this? That's absurd.
I think sometimes you sort of fool around. I think sometimes just drawing itself, you're not drawing sort of at random,
right.
You know, and, you know, will stimulate, you know, your idea. I mean, you might be drawing, it might be a guy on a phone, and then you're just fooling around with different objects. I think one time I had a bald guy on a phone, and instead of the receiver, he had a comb, and he said, "Operator, get me my hair." And, you know, so sometimes it's a combination, probably in something like, you know, the cartoon where it's like a completely verbal cartoon, like, "No, Thursday's out. How about never is never good for you."
Yeah.
I was talking on the phone with someone who was actually blowing me off. So it's a combination. I would say you have really two types of cartoonists. One are the writers, caption firsters. You know, they just start writing quips, lines, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other are the doodle firsters. They just start drawing. And one of the things to realize is that every cartoonist is doing 10 or 20 cartoons, rough drawings every week. So usually it's sort of a combination in the caption contest. And really, if you draw something, it's very unlikely, even if there's going to be something incongruous or weird, but you're going to feel there's going to be sort of an itch that, okay, there's an idea here. If you all of a sudden draw God, and you know, you can think, or Zeus, and you can think of the various things that could be a thunderbolt in his hand, but what happens if there was a tennis racket or a remote control? You're getting, you know what I mean? You're automatically not just picking random things where it's a nun, a bowling ball, in the Mormon tabernacle choir on a desert island.
Yeah. You tried all those, didn't you?
You can work on that. You can work on that.
But then there's a hyperspace where it actually becomes a New Yorker cartoon, right?
Well, one of the things I'm grateful for in the cartoonist era, the imprimatur of the New Yorker cartoon means something.
Mm-hmm.
Because it means that in this magazine, which in my opinion is the best magazine in the world, an amazing magazine, they think enough of humor not to isolate it on some page like The Light Side or something like that. But it's right there, you know, within the context of the series articles. And one of the things is where I think the New Yorker has a sense of humor, which means not just that you're funny or you write funny things, but that you poke fun of yourself. The cartoons sort of do that with the topics of the New Yorker, which is very empathetic, very liberal, believes in, you know, everything liberal and global warming and all of that. But I did a cartoon that appears there where it's two women in a bar and one woman is saying to the other, "I hate to admit it, but a man with a large carbon footprint makes me hot."
Yeah.
Or there's a,
now, who did you hear from on that one?
Well, not really. See, that's it. We didn't hear from her. I wasn't listening. Or just the general environmental approach of the New Yorker. There's a great Alex Gregory cartoon where there's two cavemen and one is saying, "I don't understand it. The water is clean, the air is pure, everything we eat is organic, but we only live to be 30. So I think there's a little subversive element, you know, that goes on that tweaks actually sort of the New Yorker pieties.
Yeah, but then again, you've gotten ripped off in your own magazine. Let Me Through, I'm the Victim, that famous cartoon.
Right. I did a cartoon where the guy's running late. But I'm not being ripped off that people are submitting their cartoons because actually people come up with the same idea. They come up with...
After you've had
same,
it, though.
No, that doesn't get into the magazine. But they'd be a little bit silly if my own cartoonist submitted to me knowingly a cartoon that I have done.
Homage. It's an homage.
Yeah. But so they just happen to come up with that idea.
Yeah. So those the other ones, the victim ones, didn't get in?
No, they didn't get in. I mean, one of the things is we have pretty strict fact-checking at the New Yorker, so that every cartoon that we buy at the meeting, so on Wednesday, David Remnick, I, and the managing editor, Sylvia Killingsworth, we look at about 50. I've selected out of basically 500 from our own cartoonists, and total might be 1,000 that come in.
Wow.
Then after we select them, they get checked against all the 80,000 cartoons that have run in the magazine to make sure that there aren't duplicates. And now we also do internet searches as well. Mm-hmm. So we try not to repeat any idea. And sometimes we make a mistake, but we make a really good effort.
And always ask yourself, has Mankoff done this?
Right, absolutely. And then on the fact checkers, going back to your original talk about animal cartoons. In 1993, when Prozac was out, I had a little bluebird, and he had a vial of the pills, and then he's saying to the guy, hi, you guy, I'm the bluebird of Prozac in 93. So the fact checkers came and said, hey, this bluebird isn't drawn right. It's much too big. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm sorry, but I got to show the pills. So back and forth and back and forth, and then I had the fact checker, Dusty, come over and said, don't let this get out, but they can't talk.
There you go.
So it's that, you know, we want, if we're going to do a cartoon where it has the Supreme Court, we're going to get the number of pillars right and stuff, but we have a lot of leeway on other things.
Well, and the book is called How About Never Is Never Good For You. That was a gift from God, right?
Absolutely. And now it's in the Yale Book of Quotations next to that other famous humorous Mao Zedong.
Yeah, right next to it. Bob, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you, Michael.
Bob Mankoff, ladies and gentlemen, How About Never Is Never Good For You. Oh, boy. Henry Holt is at, and they print all those New Yorker books. There's lots of them. This is a good one, though. Who's the big New Yorker cartoon fan here? You could win this book. Are you, sir?
Yes.
Do you subscribe to the magazine?
No longer.
Was there a cartoon that turned the tide against it?
I used to like the cartoons. They were pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, this could be yours. I'm still thinking about it.
I'm an ex-New Yorker, too.
Okay, well, that's something. All right, then.
Do we even have time for music?
Do we have time for music?
Okay.
There's always time for your music.
Short.
John?
Pressure. We had a couple tunes this week. A piano player, great jazz icon, died last week, Horace Silver. So
right,
he's one of my big favorites. So we got a couple tunes, and this one's called Strollin'.
Okay.
Once again, it's Michael Feldman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you betcha. Well, here's the moment you've been waiting for, a chance for you to play the fabulous What Do You Know quiz. Before we can do that, this gentleman here must come over here, stand right here, face this way. And your name is?
Jason Harvey.
Jason, are you from around here?
Janesville.
From Janesville. Jason Harvey from Janesville.
All questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Wish my GPD would shrink. GDP? GDP would shrink. Yeah. Okay. Persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the office phones trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. Should remember. All opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone else who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
All right. You nailed it. Thank you very much.
Say hi to my Uncle Fred Miner.
Okay. Uncle Fred. What a nice nephew. Says hello to his uncle. Let's see the hands of those of you who care to try them at the What Do You Know quiz. You just have to indicate an interest. And, I think you were one of the first to indicate an interest by raising the hand. If you would come down here, and we'll find out if you qualify. No one so far has not qualified. It could be a first. How are you?
Good. How are you?
And you are?
Tom Henriksen.
Tom, are you from around here?
Springfield, Illinois.
That's not around here.
No.
Yeah, okay, that's right. And what do you do down there in Springfield, Tom?
I work for the federal prosecutor.
What a wonderful idea. Better than against them, I would say. Yeah.
Most definitely.
Tom, give me one good reason you should play this quiz.
Unlike you, I have a face for radio.
Well, that's never been said before. Come on, we both look pretty good on radio, I think, Tom. Step right this way. Unlike you, that was kind. That was very kind of you, Tom. I appreciate it. Have a seat right there. You know, I've often heard that, but never with the unlike you before it. So,
you're welcome.
Have you always wanted to... Thank you. Have you always wanted to be on radio? Is it kind of a goal of yours or something you
sure
meant to do?
I always thought I'd be sitting at the piano, but...
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you can sit at the piano if you like. Just don't play it.
I don't play as well as he does.
Do you play, though?
Yes.
What sort of stuff do you do?
Anything but R&B.
Okay. It covers a lot of ground then, I guess. So concertos and...
Badly, but yes.
Oh, nice. R&B? You got to draw a line at R&B?
Yeah, it's hard to do a drum kit on the piano.
Well, not these days. Is it? Keyboard, you know. Yeah. Get all that on there. Do you do that like in your spare time when you're not prosecuting?
Well, I'm actually an auditor.
You audit the prosecutor?
No, I audit the targets of the investigation.
Okay. You're a good guy to have for a friend,
healthcare
but not
fraud.
An enemy.
Yes. I would say.
Anyway, Tom, but for fun, you like to play the piano. What else do you do? Sports?
No, home improvement projects.
Oh, and what are you working on right now?
Living room ceiling.
What about it?
It fell on my wife last week.
Why am I laughing? I mean, you're not laughing. I'm sorry about that. It didn't. It just flaked on her.
No, it fell down in sheets.
Mine did too a few years ago.
Oh,
I have that. Was it plaster?
Had you put it up originally?
No, I'd help bring it down. But
yeah.
No, the nails.
Is she all right?
She's fine. She's here today.
Oh, good. Where is she then? Okay, I'm sorry about laughing about that. I thought he meant, you know, a little panel fell down the whole ceiling.
Drywall and sheets fell on her.
Oh, my God.
And she promptly left town.
She did? Did
yes.
you?
Yes.
You left town? Did you leave Mr. Auditor as well?
It was already planned that I was going to leave.
Oh, it was already planned. Okay. I don't want to get into this any deeper, but the ceiling is good now? Did you fix it?
Mostly. The drywall's up. We're mudding and taping now.
Did you get a new wife in there or anything? Or?
No. Happy with the current model.
Okay. So you're back. Okay, fine. Tom, someone out there plays along with you, and how does that work then there?
People at home who want to play the quiz, dial 1-800-942-5669, and you ask them a qualifying question.
Okay. The question is, the only baby on Forbes' overexposed celebrities list. Name of the baby. The only baby on Forbes' overexposed celebrities list. Who is it? Milo knows in Mequon. Hi, Milo.
Hi.
How are you?
Pretty good.
Good. Who's the only baby on Forbes' overexposed celebrities list?
Wow. John Boehner?
Thanks, Milo. Talk to you again sometime. Drew's online from Morgantown, West Virginia. Only baby, Drew, on the overexposed celebrities list.
Maybe the prince in England.
Oh, no, but that, no, that's not the one, though. Nice try, though.
Oh, can I get another guess?
No, I'm afraid not. Dundee is in Richland Center. Hey, Dundee.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
Oh, good. You know the only baby on Forbes' overexposed celebrities list?
I'm going to guess Honey Boo Boo.
Well, she's not a baby anymore, though. She's an obnoxious young adult. Thanks, though. But Tiffany's got it in Springfield, Missouri. Tiffany, who is it?
What's that be, Northwest?
Northwest, of course. Little baby West there. Number one, overexposed baby. Easy to overexpose a baby, actually, to think about it. Tiffany, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Got a big day planned there in Springfield, or?
Well, I'm going to work soon.
Oh, going to work? Where do you work?
McDonald's.
McDonald's, okay. What time you got to be there?
4.
Oh, you got plenty of time then. We can kick back and enjoy the quiz. Here's Tom. He's your partner.
Hey, Tom.
Hi, Tiffany from the other Springfield.
Yeah, wasn't that funny? Springfield Mo and Springfield Ill. Really cool. Tiffany and Tom, you are a team. You collaborate on these together. You know how this works, Tiffany? Have you heard it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So two of you just collaborate, and it's cooperative, and we have various categories, don't we, Sarah Nix?
We do. They are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, and odds and ends.
Tiffany, you pick the first one. What would you like?
I think I'll go with odds and ends.
Odds and ends. Here it is. The tumbleweed invasion easily can be explained when you realize it's really called North Korean, Syrian, or Russian thistle. We call it tumbleweed, but really what it is North Korean, Syrian, or Russian thistle.
What do you think, Tiffany?
I was leaning towards Syrian.
I was going for the Russian.
Russian? I don't know why I repeated that, not Syrian. What's the matter with me? So you're thinking Russian thistle?
I'm thinking Russian.
All right, let's go with Russian.
Russian thistle it is. Why are you applauding Russian thistle?
One right and zero wrong.
What's up there?
Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school, or science.
Tom?
Science.
Science. As far as Humboldt penguins go, single, hetero, or gay parents are the best, according to Kent's Wildlife Park in England. Humboldt penguins, look at him, say the best parents, the keeper says, are single parents, hetero, or gay parents among the Humboldt penguins.
What do you think?
I think it's gay parents.
Gay Humboldt penguin parents
yeah.
are the best?
That's, yeah.
Tiffany?
For no particular reason.
Oh, that's what I was thinking, but then I was leaning towards single.
Oh, yeah. You want to lean back again for just a second? Because Tom is leaning right towards the gay parents thing for no reason, though. Tiffany, still there?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I think it's single.
Okay, Tom, what do you think?
I'm going to stick with my first answer.
He says it's the gay parents among the Humboldt penguins.
All right.
All right, it is, yes, by far. No contest.
Two right and zero wrong, and the categories left are current events, people, places, or things you should have learned in school.
Okay, back to Tiffany, what would you like?
Things you would have learned in school had you been paying attention.
Okay. All right. Hopefully, we can now start a sentence that way. Is that true or false? Is it now considered proper to begin a sentence with hopefully? Talk it over.
I'm thinking no, Tiffany.
I think you're right.
I'm getting groans here.
Or are you thinking that it's okay?
I'm thinking that it's okay. For no particular
Tiffany.
Reason.
Well, we've been right so far.
Okay, so you're saying hopefully is okay to use after all these years of using it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. Holy cow. You pulled it out.
Tom, find out who has more liaison, the French or the Brits, in Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know from source books. Tiffany, begin every day the What Do You Know audience way with Stephen Brew's Breakfast Blend, and later enjoy Costa Rican Terra Sue from Madison's Stephen Brew Coffee. That's coffee done right. And both of you can get on the Paula Deen Rehabilitation Bandwagon with the Lady and Sons, too. A whole new batch of recipes from Savannah from Random House, and entertain political correctness with What Do You Know the Party Game, including the subtropical Michael Feldman bobblehead from Out of the Box Publishing, available exclusively at notmuch.com. Congratulations to you both.
Nice job. Thanks, Tom. Thank you. Tiffany, hang on. We'll make sure you get an address from you. Thanks for playing.
Thank you for letting me play.
Attention, Ohio Feldman fans.
Yeah.
What Do You Know will be on the Otterbein campus on Saturday, August 2nd.
That's right.
We're welcoming a full list of local luminaries, including singer-songwriter Lydia Lovelace. For tickets, call the box office at 614-823-1109 or just go to notmuch.com.
It's going to be fun.
Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio for PRI. That's Public Radio International. Michael Feldman is our producer international. This is PRI, Public Radio International.
Something different.
Live from the Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on the piano, Jeff Hammond on bass. I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, we head to Nipton, California for our place to be, plus all the news that is, thanks for the memos and more of the What Do You Know quiz.
Yeah.
Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who also likes to see his losses as victories, it's Michael Feldman.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. You know, each week at this time, we look at all the news that is from around here, because we tried it the other way. That didn't work out so good. This is all news that is around here. We only got a couple items today. Of course, Muskego. It's always Muskego for some reason. And this is kind of interesting, I think. Muskego's former Salentine Buick dealership will be converted into a self-storage facility and coffee house. Under a new proposal, Alex Simic, who owns the Storage Master LLC, would create 325 indoor storage units within the 55,000 square feet, 186 outdoor spaces for outdoor storage, and a coffee house, 3,000 square foot coffee house. The coffee house would be called Mug Place, for standing for Muskego Urban Gathering Place, the proposal said. The intent of Mug Place is an environment where families can gather to enjoy refreshments, play board games, listen to local musicians and/or speakers, and access their storage. So, okay, that's Muskego. Muskego is always good for something, and thank you. Thank you for that, Muskego. Then just this one here. Man finds bullet in package of egg rolls. This is in Greenfield. A man was looking to take a bite out of an egg roll, but instead he chomped down on a bullet on June 19th. According to the Greenfield police report, the man told police that his daughter bought an unopened package of egg rolls from Greenfield Pick and Save. He went to eat one about 6:30 a.m. June 19th, but he bit into the bullet inside one. The man confirmed that the packaging was still intact before he opened it. He told police there were no incidents around the house on West Allerton in which a bullet could have become lodged in the food without going through the packaging, especially, I would think, unless in the moment he raised it to his, you know, you never know. That egg roll could have saved his life. The man was advised to contact Pick and Save to report the incident. So there you go, another Pick and Save bullet incident. Bullet and egg roll incident. That's the only news that is. Now the actual memo sent in by an actual listener, and this one is from Fairbanks. And it reads as follows. Free whale blubber. I found 3 bags of whale blubber with skin attached in the freezer of a vacant room in a hotel in town where I work. No one else wanted it, so I took it home and tried some. Personally, I think it's unremarkable. But I can see how indigenous peoples would eat the stuff. A whale has so much of it, and he wouldn't want to waste food. Now, bear in mind, I don't know who packed the food, so I don't know if it was dealt with properly to prevent contamination. It's in some vacuum seal bags, but it wasn't vacuum sealed, just sealed without removing the air. I boiled it myself, and I didn't get sick or anything, though I don't know if it would make you sick were you to eat it raw. Email me if you want it, and we'll meet up at Safeway or something so you can pick it up. P.S. 2 of the bags are still sealed as I found them. One of them, I ate half the blubber, so I put the rest in a Ziploc bag. All in all, I'd say it's a couple pounds of blubber. Do not contact me with unsolicited services or offers. Thank you very much for that. From Fairbanks, free blubber. And where can they send all these memos or what have you?
They can send the memos to whatdoyouknow@wpr.org with the subject line memos, or go to notmuch.com and find a way to post it there.
Okay. And also, any communications, if you have corrections, sometimes there's speaking of fact checkers.
If you want to submit some cartoons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, or if there's a factual error of some sort that one of the other people on the staff here made. We haven't discussed that. Gerald Freeman and Roxanne Lang live in, they live in Nipton, California, which is a ghost town, which is a little unusual to begin with. But we first talked with them towards the beginning of What Do You Know, many years ago, when they actually have sort of taken this ghost town, which is in the Mojave Desert, and tried to reclaim it and actually started rebuilding it and making it kind of a solar town. So updating it, I'll tell you the story. They're on the line with us right now, Gerald Freeman, Roxanne Lang, and how are you guys?
Yeah, we're fine.
Great.
Yeah? Are you in Nipton right now as we speak, or probably not, huh?
No, we're not.
Where are you? Are you on vacation in another part of the desert?
We're in Henderson, Nevada at the moment.
Yeah.
Waiting to see a show this afternoon.
Yeah. You're going to Las Vegas to see something?
Yeah, which is a nearby hamlet to Nipton.
Yeah. First of all, when you think about it, this place, Nipton, is in the middle of the Mojave Desert, but it's an hour from Las Vegas, so that's very convenient.
Yeah, we like to say we're conveniently located in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. So and you get a lot of people coming down from Vegas, really, to experience the whole desert thing, right?
Yes, from Vegas, from the L.A. coastal area, and now from all over Europe.
Yeah. I read some of your lottery tickets that you sell there at the trading post. That's the place where people go to get them, right, for some reason?
Well, it's one of the places. In 1990, 1991, two, we were the largest seller of lottery tickets in the entire state of California.
Yeah. What's the thinking there? What are people thinking? That they got to get out of Vegas to buy a lottery ticket, obviously.
Yeah. Well, they want to win $1 million or $20 million or $200 million or $300 million, and that might be their lucky day.
Yeah, but do they think the odds would be better in the Mojave Desert?
With no ticket, no laundry.
That's true.
And they don't sell them in Nevada.
Yeah. Oh, they don't. Yeah.
It's against the law.
Well, you got to draw a line somewhere, I guess, huh?
Yeah.
What is that? That's really weird, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the casinos don't like the lottery.
Oh, I can see. Okay, so that makes sense then. So an hour away, you can get all the stuff. Yeah, well, how is it going? Does it exist now as a self-sustaining community, Nipton?
Yeah, we're pretty much self-sustaining, but it's been a piecemeal thing through the years, adding a piece here, a piece there, and so forth. We have a bed and breakfast, a historic bed and breakfast. We have a campground, and we have a cafe which serves extraordinary Mexican food. And in general, we have a quiet environment where people can let themselves loose and not be compressed as they are in the city.
Mm-hmm. And so, but the history of this town is quite amazing. It started as a mining camp, is that right?
That's right.
And that would have been when, in the early 1900s?
Yeah, that was about early 1900s, just about then. It's hard to pin it down precisely to a day, but around 1900.
Mm-hmm.
Also a railroad town.
Right. And that happened almost concurrently, didn't it? I mean, they discovered gold out there or something, and then the railroad came through to pick it all up.
Right. And the cows.
And the cows, yeah. So then who was actually the founder of the town?
Well, there was a guy from Pennsylvania by the name of Carnes, and he came out to Nipton in the year 1900 and became the first postmaster there, and more or less established a presence. Mm-hmm. And I would say that he was the founder, mm-hmm. The first real live individual we can identify that made Nipton his home.
Yeah. And there was this guy, Harry Treherne, the Cornish miner who lived there.
He followed Carnes.
Yeah.
Around 1915.
Yeah. Did Clara Bow come out to be with Treherne? And how did that work? Clara Bow, the it girl from the movies early on.
We have several pictures of Clara Bow with Treherne.
Oh, yeah.
Clara and her husband, Rex Belt, with Treherne in front of the Hotel Nipton and looking pretty sprightly. And
Clara Bow had a ranch nearby, and they would drive their cattle down to Nipton to load it on the rail.
Yeah. Is there still ranching that goes on in the area?
No, it's been been phased out by the federal government.
Oh.
They've made it a national park unit instead.
Yeah.
And they don't like exotic animals like cows roaming their national park.
I know, we get them around here, too. They're a nuisance. The boom ended when? Relatively recently, right?
Which boom?
I mean, the whole gold thing ran out, right?
Oh, yeah. There was a gold thing that we latched onto in the 80s, and it petered out.
Yeah.
And then the lottery came along, and it added its piece. And then the park came along and added its piece, and then we put in solar energy. I'm a great believer in global warming, mm-hmm. and I'm a great advocate of steps to alleviate global warming. So I plumb Nipton for a solar system, which now provides a large percentage of the total power that we use.
Yeah. Yeah, I see this picture of at your solar array, your solar factory or whatever. Is that what you call it?
A generator station? How about that?
Yeah. And that's been in for some years now, or is it still being built?
We cut the ribbon in 2010, so it's in 4 years.
Is there a resident population in town?
Oh, yeah. We have
what's the population there?
A long-term resident population of... six, and then we have an additional 20 to 40 itinerants, mm-hmm. Some of which have been there for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people who work off-site and at a number of the local jobs, the mine nearby, the rare earth mine, and the Bright Source solar energy plant, and now a new California Highway Project, California Entry Point, which is their building right now as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
So we get people who need to stay in the area come to Nipton and become a villager.
Yeah. But when you came there in the 80s,
yeah,
there was pretty much nothing, right? I mean, it was reduced to...
There was zero.
Yeah. And so what was your thinking? I mean, there's a place in the Mojave Desert that used to be something and now is nothing, and you thought this was an opportunity to make something.
Well, here's the deal,
yeah.
Michael. I was living in L.A. at the time, and
uh-huh.
I was in the gold mining business out there.
Okay.
And I had to drive 2 or 3 days a week all the way out from L.A. to there. And the prices in L.A. kept going up and up and up, and the traffic got worse and worse and worse, and the smog got worse and worse and worse. And then there was the earthquake coming that I'm a geologist, and I was tuned into the earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to get out of Dodge. And for me, Nipton offered the possibility of being a home and having a business that could sustain me.
Yeah.
So I jumped on it.
Yeah. Do a lot of people commute from L.A. to Goldmine and the Mojave? Well,
I doubt it.
Probably just you, actually.
Me amongst maybe a few others, but I don't even know who they are.
Yeah. And so you have to acquire this, the town, parcel by parcel? Or how does that work?
No, there was one guy who was who had gotten it, and he it was all one parcel at the time, and I subdivided it, but I bought it from him, and that escrow closed January 1985. Are you still with me? Are we there?
Yes, yeah, I don't know what happened there. We're still with
now,
you.
Now I'm working on getting a new concept in. I'm hoping to take sunlight and water, which we have a huge abundance, both sunlight and water, and convert it into hydrogen, which will then give us a completely independent source of power.
Yeah.
And it will be completely environmentally benign. It will contribute zero to global warming.
So, and are people starting to flock? Now, I said you have six people actually live there, full-time residents, so it doesn't seem like they've gotten the word yet. This is almost like a Valhalla here, something that's...
Well, if you like the heat, and the fact there are no crowds of people around you, the drugstore is an hour away, so anything else is an hour away, but if you like solitude and quiet, it's a great place to be. And what I've just learned is as this global warming issue heats up, the people who live in areas that have high humidity are going to be really in trouble because their core body temperatures are going to go up beyond the level of tolerance. And so the low humidity areas are going to have a premium value. And Nipton has very low humidity. We get about 1 or 2 inches of rain a year.
Yeah. Well, where is all the water that you talked about?
It's a huge, huge underground lake left over from glacial time.
No kidding, yeah.
That we draw on. And we're way up on upstream on it, so we're we have a premium position on drawing on that water.
Yeah, hasn't Las Vegas drained that yet?
Well,
don't they know about it?
They sure as heck know about it, and they're trying, but they're not going to be successful because it's a complex legal thing between California, which also is jealous of its water, by the way.
I bet, yeah.
So they're not looking for people sucking their water here in California.
No. Is there a governance there? I mean, do you have any sort of a mayor, not a mayor, but some like a town officer?
We're all sitting right here on
the phone. Yeah. So you're the guys to talk to if you want something. And
We're self-appointed.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there are 3 registered voters in town.
Yeah.
And the last school board election, or one of the reasons, I actually won by 4 votes. So it's a...
Fraud. There is fraud involved in it. And we're looking into it.
Well, so, there's fraud involved in all these elections. I mean, you can almost count on that.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. That explains it. Now, if someone were thinking about moving out there, I mean, is there available housing, or they have to come with some idea in mind as how they're going to live?
Well, we're very flexible. We want to encourage people to come and live, and we would work with them to get to what they needed and wanted. One can build houses, one can live in an RV. We have a couple of houses that we rent out, and I would, I'm hoping to build some sustainable, energy efficient buildings there that will serve as residencies as time goes on.
Are there zoning restrictions?
Well, there's a lot of restrictions out of County of San Bernardino. You just have to meet the code, building codes of San Bernardino County, which are pretty extensive, and you have to be patient and have a big pocketbook to get through all the zoning.
Yeah.
I mean, the county requirements.
Yeah. Fortunately, you're on the zoning board, I would imagine.
No, unfortunately not. would like to be, but not.
Yeah. Have you gotten a lot of interest now? You had a huge story in the New York Times that showed you and your Earth solar array in various parts of town and so forth.
Yeah, and interest from all over the place and in different. And I was just interviewed last week by a Japanese newspaper, for example, and we get lots of inquiries from all over the place. The guy from the University of Pennsylvania is coming out on what it's called the Kenosis Project, and it deals with the genius of places, namely, in any given place, there's a genius, a certain inherent aspect to it that should be brought out and coordinated with.
Mm-hmm.
And he's coming out to visit on the 9th of July. So then we have other interests, all kind of. I am just having a hard time catching up with all that stuff that came in from that article.
Okay. Roxanne, what about, did you think, is this what you signed on for 30 years ago?
Not really, Michael. When I first married Jerry, we were living in Malibu, California.
Yeah, slight change.
Yeah, just a small.
So he lured you with Malibu, and then he took you out to Nipton, huh?
Yeah. One morning I woke up, and I went, what?
You promised him a rose garden.
A slight adjustment, but you have you adjusted yet? Has it taken 30 years to adjust? Or?
Yeah. I'm not the self-appointed mayor anymore. I'm now the self-appointed goddess of Nipton.
The goddess.
Elevated.
Yeah, an elevated position, definitely. Is the work easier as goddess as opposed to mayor?
Yeah. Well, somebody called Jerry the god of Nipton, so I decided, well, that makes me the goddess then.
Does it pay? It probably doesn't pay. That's the only thing.
No. Free labor. Yeah.
Well, it's been quite a trip, and I know we spoke in the late '80s. I know I was trying to look. I couldn't find the town of the week actually.
Yeah, we tried. Michael, come on out to Nipton.
Yeah.
Yeah, we want to offer you the Clara Bow Room to stay in.
Yeah.
The Clara Bow Room.
Her spirit still lives there.
Wow. That's enticing.
There'll be no charge to you. It'll be a soft deal.
All right. You'll see me there. I want to thank you. I want to thank you both. Gerald Freeman, Roxanne Lang, Nipton, California, the god and goddesses of heaven on earth. Thank you both. Nice talking to you again. Really kind of amazing. 30 years of that. Plugging away. Solar, they got the water.
Everything.
They got it. That was a very nice song, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Or Silver.
A couple quick plug here.
Yeah.
Eric Alexander is a great tenor player, and this weekend at the Jazz Showcase in Chicago, he's playing there with a quartet, and our own very own little Jeff Hammond is playing bass.
Playing bass with them?
Playing bass.
Yeah. Okay, that got a big response, but yeah.
And this is another tune by...
Oh, that's great.
This is another tune by Horace Silver, and it's called Whenever Lester Plays the Blues.
Oh, yeah. Sounds great.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's Michael Feldman.
Did you get in some reflections?
A little bit.
Yeah. Are we done with that now? You've reflected quite a bit over the past few weeks.
It's kind of open-ended.
Open-ended reflections from our bass player, Jeff Hammond. Oh, we got the Andersons here from St. Louis. Look, these are all Andersons, right? Yeah. Where did the Andersons start here and go all the way? You're all Andersons.
Yep.
Holy cow. Let's say hello to all the Andersons here. This is?
Carrie.
Carrie Anderson. She's the quiet one.
Dave.
Dave. Okay, so you're the parents of the following Andersons.
Ian.
Ian.
Ben.
Ben. Wait a minute. I got to get down here. I can't get to all the Andersons.
Elise.
Emma.
Emma. Okay, so these are the children. Children Andersons. And then here we got, which generation?
Ray. I'm the father of David.
Father of David. Okay, so this is generational. This is so cool.
Yeah. Sean Anderson.
Yeah. How do you fit in all this?
I'm in the middle.
Right here.
Mary.
The Andersons, ladies and gentlemen. I got all your cards here. Let's see now. Who is this now? KFC or Popeyes? Ian, what do you say?
KFC.
Popeyes?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks. I don't have an opinion on it, to tell you the truth. I've been to both, and I really have no opinion. Do you prefer your corn hand-shucked or regular shucked? Emma, what does that even mean? Well,
my uncle helped me on that.
He didn't help you too much. I got news for you. You know what that means?
I'm not sure.
Regular shucked or extra? I don't know. What's you fill me in?
Well, hand shucked is done, you know, with the hands, and then regular shucked. I think that might be a different process. I was just thinking about.
Think?
It.
You don't know?
I wanted to see your perspective on it. I wasn't sure.
How could I have a perspective? You don't even know about it, and you're talking about it. Have you ever shucked corn?
Yeah, a couple of times.
And, of course?
Yeah.
What is that other process, then, that some other animal that shucks them?
It's shucked by another, or I'm not sure. It's kind of
pre-shucked.
Machine, probably.
Machine shucked?
Corn shucker. We don't hear much about that.
Oh,
a pretty important moment for the corn people.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if you knew about the processes of.
Why would I, really?
I mean, I don't know. I've never been on.
You have a lot of corn, you know, probably around there, but.
Yeah. I was
are you
just
in the corn business? Or?
No. Just corn
jokes. Just corn jokes. Okay. Okay, that was good. All right, so that doesn't make sense. What is your favorite donut? Sean, that's yep. You. You again, huh?
Yes.
I'm not going to bite at that one. Okay, let's see now. Who else? Do I have your question here?
No, I didn't submit.
Fill out a card? I'm sorry, you have to leave. Don't fill out a card and give me that gum, young lady. Spit it right. No, please don't. I'm done with that. I used to teach, and I did that one time for a joke, and it was so disgusting. Spit gum. Did you have a question that you were thinking about?
No.
Well, what's going on in your life these days? How are things?
Good.
Having a good summer?
Yeah, definitely.
Where do kids hang out over the summer? And what part of St. Louis are you in?
Maplewood.
Maplewood, okay. Where do kids hang there? Can't you say?
They go to, like, the Starbucks and Webster Groves or whatever.
Starbucks and Webster Groves. Pretty cool. It's expensive, though, but if you buy a coffee, you can stay there, like, all day, right?
Yeah.
It used to be McDonald's when I was a kid. We didn't have Starbucks, so we didn't have Wi-Fi, free Wi-Fi, over at the old McDonald's. How are you doing?
Good, I guess.
Yeah. You guys, this summer going good?
Yep.
Yeah? What are you doing? Can't you say?
Working a lot.
Well, you're working. Where are you working?
I'm caddying.
Oh, you are? Oh,
yeah.
Cool. Get some good tips, do you?
Not really, no.
What's the matter with those guys?
I don't know.
Maybe there's something you're not doing.
No, I'm doing everything right.
That's what I would think. I mean, just looking at you, so you're doing all right. They should give you a bunch of money.
That's right.
All right, well, keep working. You got the good work ethic. Are you working, too?
No.
You're not going to caddy because there's no money in it, right?
Yeah. It's a broke job. It's for people who are broke.
Great to have the Andersons here. Let's hear it for all the Andersons. Can we give them stuff?
We can give them everything.
Give them stuff.
We could give,
give them a bunch of
whiskey
stuff.
For the adults from Madison's Old Sugar Distillery.
Whiskey? You drink whiskey?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, they drink whiskey.
Made right here in Madison, no less.
Oh, good.
There's a T-shirt for kids, and if you cut it up, you could each have a patch or something. That might work. Oh. I mean, I think we only have one from the USS Razorback. Uh-huh. But there's a Frisbee. Chris, are we allowed to
I
give away
that? I threw that out already.
Oh, there's a party game?
Yeah.
Party game? No? Okay.
Yeah. Not good with kids, are
there's you? A Flash Master math game.
They're gonna, so that's you think kids
vacation,
want that kind of stuff?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. All right.
How about that? Whiskey for the kids?
What's like whiskey but for kids?
Wine?
Red
we'll
Bull?
Get you something. Don't worry. Every Anderson here today will get something fabulous. Thanks for being here. All right. We got the Hornungs, Steve Hornung and family, I believe, from Milton. They're here somewhere. Oh, they're way in back there. Is that as close as you wanted to get?
No, I just like the leg room, Mike.
You like the leg room? Okay. You want me to come back here and say hello, or is it not necessary?
I can see you right very well.
Okay. You can see me well from there. That's right. Thank you for that. It saves me an amazing trip around the edge of there. Nice to have you here, though.
Long distance, probably.
Yeah. And it says here you got these for your birthday, these tickets?
Yeah. My daughter got me tickets for Mike Feldman. Yeah. My daughter, her best friend, my wife. Yeah. It was either this or Garrison, and this was closer.
Oh, I know you did. I'm glad I didn't come back there, because now no one heard that. No one heard that, so they didn't hear your little joke. Well, happy birthday anyhow. Yeah, thanks for coming. Professional cougar, is that what this says? Really? Well, come on, then. Come on. So you got to stand up here. Professional cougar, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't know there was such a thing.
I'm actually a lead singer in a band called the Cougars.
What?
I'm a singer in a band called the Cougars.
Oh, you're a singer in a band called the Cougars.
He's 5 years older than I am, so.
Oh, okay. That's cool. And where does this band play? Is this Green Bay band?
Green Bay, all over Wisconsin.
Yeah. What kind of material do you do?
Rock. Anything that's dancey and rock, classic rock, new pop.
Yeah. What do you like to do the best when you're up there belting?
Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin?
Mm-hmm.
Which one do you do?
Rock and roll.
Rock and roll. I don't suppose we could. You cover that?
Sorry.
You got the wrong band here for me right now. That's cool. And are you on tour now, or what's going on?
No, I'm actually retired. I'm retiring now, yes.
As of this interview?
Yeah.
From band singing?
From that band, yes.
From that band. Are you going to another band, or are you going to?
I'm taking a break.
Hiatus, as they say?
Yes, yes. I'll sing in the shower for a while and annoy my neighbors.
Are you thinking of going on something else, some other lineup?
I might sing at church again.
Oh, okay. Same material. Led Zeppelin is very good. Well, depends on the denomination, once again.
Yes.
Their way to heaven. All right.
Nice to meet you, too.
Nice to meet you as well, sir. How are you?
I'm well.
That's good. Are you a singer in a band as well?
Absolutely not.
You're in the band?
He's the sound guy.
I'm a sound guy.
Sound guy gets the girl. I love that. Sound guy gets the singer. There's some justice in the world. Next, it'll be the lighting guy, I guess. Are you going to the Radicals tonight? Is that Radicals?
Radicals.
Radicals game?
Yeah, go Radicals.
What is the Radicals? Wait a second here now.
Madison's Ultimate Frisbee.
Oh, the Ultimate Frisbee. We're getting a lot of you guys here. Are you in the Radicals? Yeah, because I don't know, there's an upper limit for radicals. Or, you know, I haven't seen many mature individuals playing this Frisbee thing.
Right. I mean, I grew up on Frisbee, but we didn't have Ultimate when I was younger.
No.
So my son took it up in college and is...
You grew up on Frisbee? Because you're probably the same age I am.
Yeah, we played Frisbee.
We had a Whammo, but was that a Frisbee? I don't know.
Yes, exactly. I understand you really can't call it a Frisbee. I mean, you can't call the game Frisbee. You have to call it Ultimate. It's different.
What happens if you call it Frisbee?
They kind of kick you out. They think that you don't know what you're talking about.
What makes it, I should ask him again, what makes it Ultimate as opposed to just throwing around a Frisbee?
Well, Frisbee's actually a brand name,
okay.
And they kind of make garbage. So you used a Discraft instead.
Oh, Discraft.
That's the brand of choice.
You use the Whammo? The old Whammos are really great. They weighed about a pound and a half.
I tried to play with them once, and I just couldn't do it.
Did you really a Whammo?
Yeah.
Did Whammo or did Frisbee invent the Frisbee?
No, Frisbee did. Yeah.
And there was a guy named Frisbee, wasn't there?
Well, Frisbee, there's Whammo toys that made Frisbee. It's the same thing.
But I think...
So it's a Frisbee by Whammo. Isn't this a fascinating... This is public radio at its best. I don't care what you say. So you're playing tonight?
Oh, no, I'm just a fan.
Oh, you're a fan. It says, are you going to the Radicals game? So those friends of yours?
I wish.
This is a big deal, right? It's professional, ultimate dudes.
Yeah, there's the team from Detroit is coming here to play the Madison Radicals. Yeah.
Where is this going to happen?
Brees Stevens Field.
Oh, Brees Stevens. Wow, that's really something. You're into this totally, huh?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's very exciting.
You would have done this if the generations had linked up.
In a heartbeat. Definitely.
Really?
Definitely.
What game did you play?
I was more of a baseball guy.
Really?
Yep.
Pitcher?
I did play some pitcher.
Yeah, you're built like a pitcher. Really quite a wind-up and a stretch.
I'm built like a retired pitcher.
Nice to meet you. You are?
Mitch Ginsburg.
Mitch Ginsburg and?
Sam Ginsburg.
And, of course?
Kathy Ginsburg.
Kathy Ginsburg
and? Emily Cicina.
You're with the Ginsburg here. Okay, that's okay. The Ginsburg clan, ladies and gentlemen. We got them all here today. Denise Gallagher is here from Fairfield. She could tell me who I was in my last life. If you could tell me who I am in this life, I'd appreciate it, actually. That's my major question right now, and she is she's from Fairfield, and originally from Philly, and she's an OT, and she does it all, really, don't you? I can get you to stand up here and say hello. So what is this past life thing? Do you do that?
I'm asking you if you know your last lifetime.
No, I have no idea. I'm losing contact with this one.
You ever felt like maybe you've been here before in some place and, I don't know, maybe you were a burlesque dancer in your last life or something?
You know, I suspect I was exactly the same in my previous lifetime. And any I might have had before that or that might follow. You know, I'm one of those people who just can't change.
I see. Boring. Okay.
I'm okay.
Okay.
No, I know you didn't mean it.
I can't tell you your last life.
I mean, do you have some sense of who you were last time?
Just recently had a past life, a regression, yes. Really? And I was in Bavaria as a Bürgermeister. I had three boys. I was an uptight guy.
Uptight Bürgermeister with three boys in Bavaria.
I decided to mix it up a little bit this life.
Yeah.
Get wild and crazy, yeah.
So this was your sort of reaction to being an uptight Bürgermeister in Bavaria.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm going to have fun this life, yeah.
Yeah. Has that worked out for you?
Mostly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You still have a taste for the beer and the...
Of course.
And the sausage?
No. No sausage, no. You're
biting into a Braunschweiger or something, and you said, God, and channeled right back to the...
No.
Do you know the one before that, before you were the Bürgermeister?
I was in Italy, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And before the Bürgermeister?
Yeah.
What were you doing in Italy before that?
Oh, gosh, I was
Italian
walking.
Sausage?
I don't know. I don't have a real clear sense of that one. But I actually did live in Italy for a period of time, and I saw a place that I think I had been, yeah.
It looked familiar?
Mm-hmm.
I see that now, but it's actually my house. You know, so I'm the wrong person to remember these. How do you actually channel back to get them? Is there a way of doing that? If I could relax, maybe I could.
Oh, boy, you don't want to know.
Okay, you're right.
Okay. I'll tell you later.
Okay. Got any on you? Or... Okay. Denise, very nice to meet you in this lifetime. Oh, yeah! Oh, boy, one lifetime is not enough. That's for this. I did a comedy quiz show in 1706 in France. It was all in French. I could speak it then perfectly. Okay, it's the quiz time again, is what I'm trying to say. You can put your hand up or any other thing you want. Okay, come on, over here. Yes, representing all youth. You look like you know it all. How are you?
I'm good.
I love your hair.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's new.
Yeah. How did you get that to happen where it's all up like that?
You just blow dry it in some product. That's about it.
What sort of product do you use?
The lady at the hair salon gave me something.
She did? Really? Yeah. Okay. I try to get my hair to do that, but there's no hair. And your name is?
I'm Dominic.
Dominic. Yep. Are you from around here?
Or? I'm from Algonquin, like Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Cool. What are you doing these days, in school?
I'm working and going to college, yeah.
Dominic, give me one good reason you should play this quiz.
Because I've never played it before.
Okay! Youth has its say. Welcome to Youth Has Its Say. Now, Dominic, right up there, you're cool. All right. So what are you into these days, Dominic?
I don't know. I used to be into music, but now... You know, work's overcome my life.
Yeah. So, what are you working at? You can't.
No. There's no money in it.
I feel bad.
I work for Teavana.
Yeah.
Do you know Teavana?
No.
It's Starbucks owns it. It's like Starbucks, but tea, but it's retail. So you should stop by. There's one at Westtown
Mall. Starbucks, but it's tea and it's retail, so it's nothing like Starbucks.
Well, Starbucks owns it. We make tea, but it's more for the customer to take tea home, like.
Oh, you take tea home with you.
Yeah, it's loosely.
Like no one ever has tea anymore.
No, so it's not Lipton. It's better.
Does it have a flow-through bag? I like the tea bag because you get much better brewing. All right, so that's cool.
Yeah, it's fun. Starbucks is a great company for sure.
Yeah, but it's long hours, I suppose. And it's kind of taken up your whole life.
Definitely has taken up a big portion of my life. My life is Teavana. You know, it's.
I know, very good.
Yeah,
they're probably not listening. Time. You don't have to keep this up.
Time is all the time.
And where is this particular one you work at?
I work at the Deer Park location in Chicago.
Yeah.
So it's a good time.
And so it's just retail?
It's a lot of sales.
Sales, though.
So, yeah.
So people come by in bulk?
Yeah, that's what my job is, to make sure that they walk out the door with the
empty
bank account. That's the goal.
Is it kind of pricey? Lipton's is very reasonable.
Yeah, it's Teavana's, pretty pricey, so.
Okay.
Got to make a living somehow, right?
Yeah, but it's good.
It's fun.
And it's teas from all over.
It's, mostly China and Japan.
And all over.
Yeah, Sri Lanka, I think.
Yeah.
So.
They don't have that stuff that passes through a civet and then poops it out and you make tea out of it. No, that's coffee.
I think that's something different.
That's coffee.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. But what are you hoping to do? What are you aiming towards?
At first I wanted to do something with music and recording technology and...
Sure.
Something with the arts. Yeah. But now I kind of want to go into business.
You do?
So,
this tea thing has kind of turned you on.
Yeah, well, I'm the assistant GM, so it's, been definitely successful.
You rocketed to the top.
Oh, yeah, quickly. It was awesome. So,
so you're really good at sales.
I would say so, for sure. So maybe something with sales, or I'm good at communication, so something, in communication.
You're communicating very well, I think.
Good, yeah. Maybe going to radio, who knows?
Yeah. But in music, so the music thing is...
Yeah, I sang and played piano for a while, and, with work and college, it kind of took a back seat. So, if it comes up again, it does. Yeah. If not, then that's cool, too.
And so where are you going to school?
Right now, I'm just going to community college at Harper in Schaumburg, and then...
Business degree? Is that what you're
looking at? Well, technically right now, it's still arts, but Starbucks is doing a thing where if you go to ASU, they pay for your whole tuition now.
You have to go to ASU, though. There's a catch.
Yeah, but if you go in as a junior...
ASU? Then,
in Arizona. Arizona State.
That one.
Yeah.
Party school.
So they're gonna pay for me to get, to go party.
They're going to pay you to party, man. This is the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah, Starbucks is awesome.
What an awesome company.
Yeah, totally.
I might retire into that sort of thing. That'd be
so
cool.
Yeah, go get a job as a barista.
End
make
up
some drinks.
Partying at ASU.
That'd be we can hang out.
I think it'd be fun to hang out with.
We'd have a good time for sure.
Cool. All right, Dominic, great to have you here. And
you.
The quiz, someone out there plays along with you. I think you know how that works. Yep. And you know how that works too, right,
Sarah? Yeah, people who at home who want to play the quiz, pick up the phone and dial 1-800-942-5669 and you ask them a question.
You know teas, don't you?
Not really. I'm more of a coffee.
You're no teas, are you?
I'm more of a coffee girl.
There's tea that tastes like coffee.
You up? But why would you do that when there's coffee in the world?
Well, because sometimes, I don't know, coffee gives people a stomach ache or people have get ulcers. I don't know about that.
Now, let me see how you would interest her in a tea. She goes in there and says,
well,
I'm
we try some samples. I'd ask what her favorite one is, and I would just pretty much lead her to the tea and be like,
Did you say bleed her? Or
There's not that
lead
much.
Her. So then I'd be like, here's the tea. It smells good, right? You know, got to ask that mirror question.
Yeah.
And then you're pretty much forcing them to take some home.
But wouldn't you dazzle her with the background of where these teas are from?
Oh, yeah.
And
you
the
tell
nuance
them,
and
yeah, taste, innovation, like, history, all that kind of stuff.
Give me a description of a tea.
So one I would show her. She likes coffee. So I'd show her a tea called Golden Monkey. It's a black tea. Yeah. She'll be like, oh, it has awesome cocoa undertones, good for your immune system, digestive, and metabolism. Sounds good, right? We're going to take some home today. And she'd be like, yeah, totally, let's do it.
Oh, that's nothing wrong with that.
No,
tea
if
at all.
You're excited, they'll be excited.
Are you excited?
I have mixed feelings about the high pressure sale.
Yeah. Westtown Mall is really close. My friend Stephanie, go visit her.
Okay. I think you're good, Dominic. Someone out there plays along, and how do they do that?
Well, we already told them, but we can tell them again that they pick up the phone and they dial
1-800-942-5669. Anyway, what is this? Oh, percentage of Americans who think they are much less intelligent than the average American.
Much less.
Percentage of Americans who think they are much less intelligent than the average American. Okay,
that's a low percentage. People usually think they're.
You don't have to comment on these, really. This is not your part. Okay, let's go to the phones right now. Jeffrey, Kansas City. Jeffrey.
Yes. Yes, Mike.
Hi. Percentage of Americans who think they are much less intelligent than the average American.
Well, I can only judge from my own experience. I would say 60%.
Holy cow, that's way too high. Sorry, Jeff. Mark's in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Mark, percentage of Americans who think they are much less intelligent than the average American?
4.
Huh?
4.
4? 4%?
That's my guess.
Okay, it's a little high, but we'll take that. It's 1%. You know, maybe there some people would fudge on it.
Well, most people think they're pretty smart.
Yeah, okay. All right, nice going, Mark.
Hey,
I'm not saying it's because we're running out of time, but 4 is pretty close to 1, let's face it. Mark, what do you do there in Myrtle Beach?
Not a whole lot lately.
Cool. Well, that's the place to be, huh? To do it. Or to not do it. Cool. Mark, this is Dominic.
Hey, Mark.
Hi,
how's
Dominic.
It going?
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
How's your tea
good
supply? Good?
I just had some tea today.
Oh, isn't it? What did you have?
Very nice.
Just iced tea.
A what?
Iced tea.
Just my tea, yeah.
Okay. I mean the brand, the flavor, the nuance.
Oh, it was just Lipton, with the flow-through bag.
Oh,
that's it.
Okay. Mark and Dominic, you work as a team. We have various categories. Sarah Nix will tell us those.
Yeah, the categories are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, or odds and ends.
Mark, what would you like?
Let's go with science.
Science it is. If a nematode wants to live a long time, they must do one of the following. They must A, never reproduce, B, stop eating, or C, reduce their stress by crawling less. Nematode.
What do you think, Dominic?
It's a worm.
I'm going to go with the never reproduce, just because.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That seems about right.
No, I'm sorry. They have to stop eating. They can reproduce all they want. Okay, don't worry about it. That would be just.
That would be, sadly, 0 right and 1 wrong.
Okay, what's left?
Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school, or odds and ends.
All right,
Dominic.
I'm going to go with current events because I didn't pay attention.
Right out of the news. They've done the math, and the universe's lifespan after the Big Bang should be how long? They've just done this is just recently. They've done the math on it. The universe's lifespan after the Big Bang should be, according to the math that they've just done, how long? This made news all over.
There's no multiple choice?
No, this is...
Yeah, really.
Current events.
What do you think, Mark?
I must not have listened to the news enough this week.
Oh, it's been all over. All things considered, was all over.
A million years? I don't know.
The surprising finding, according to...
A billion?
The surprising, counterintuitive finding.
Wait.
After the Big Bang.
Maybe, I think... I'm going to go with 1.5 billion years.
Oh, no, it's going to be longer than that.
Yeah.
Longer?
Okay, you guys are in the wrong. I'm sorry. It's microseconds. It should have actually collapsed within microseconds, according to the math.
So it's just...
We're checking the math now, so I'm sorry. Yeah.
Guys, are we going to be the first pair to lose the quiz in forever?
Possibly. How many is it?
Are we going to be?
Because that's zero right and two wrong.
How many wrong can they get?
Thanks, Sarah.
I think they can only get two more wrong. No, I don't know that.
No, one more wrong.
I don't know.
Okay, you're fine.
There's no.
All right, we'll keep going.
People, places, things you should have learned in school, or odds.
Till they win.
There we go.
That's how we're playing. Mark?
Well, let's go with things you should have learned. Maybe we actually learned something.
Okay.
Let's see.
Illustrate peristalsis.
Peristalsis?
Peristalsis.
Paralysis?
Peristalsis. Okay.
What is that?
You don't like that one? All right. When you think of boil, you think the behavior of what?
Water.
Yeah.
Okay, let me see.
Wait, I know what peristalsis is.
Okay.
Oh, wait, let's go back to that one.
That's the wave when you swallow, and it goes down the digestive tract.
So by swallowing, you could demonstrate it.
Yeah. Yep.
That's the sound of it.
Yes.
There we go.
Okay, that's one right. Congratulations.
Woohoo!
You win the consolation prize.
Dominic,
on the quiz.
You'll be ready to foil the penguin conspiracy for world domination with the avenging narwhal constructed from hard vinyl with detachable unicorn tusk set to impale the included devious penguin from Archie McPhee. Mark, whether you're wondering about ecstasy, evolution, or the periodic table, you'll find it in Glad You Asked. Intriguing names, facts, and ideas for the curious-minded by Michael Feldman from the editors of Encyclopedia Britannica and Triumph Books. Congratulations to you both.
Yeah, nice job.
Awesome.
For not knowing anything, you did really good. Good luck to you. Mark, thanks for playing. Hang on just a second. Make sure you get that.
Hey, Columbus, Ohio. What do you know? We'll be in town on Saturday, August 2nd for a special broadcast on the Otterbein campus. You can get your tickets and find more information at the box office, 614-823-1109, or at notmuch.com. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio for Public Radio International. Michael Feldman is our producer international. Adam Friedrich is our producer, with assistance from Chris Myshock, Lyle Anderson, Martin Babcock, Kelly Osborne, and Diana Cook. Our technical director is Tom Blaine, with help from Aubrey Ralph and Brad Cole.
Thanks for coming, you guys. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
PRI, Public Radio International.